The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept and hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. Today is day 6 of this 7-day session here at Mountain Gate in northern New Mexico in March 2017. Barely one more day left in Sesshin, but it is sufficient for significantly deeper work. And I pray that each one of you will take that to heart and dive into it. We have such little opportunity, really, to do deep practice of Sesshin. Everybody here has got work, jobs, almost everybody, I should say, and the rest of us have busy lives full of responsibilities. And to be able to carve out a week, not to mention transportation, to come and just give ourselves completely to this meditation practice is a huge gift and a huge responsibility. We don't want to waste a single minute. And yet, our self-image would love it if we'd just go on a vacation instead. Unfortunately, that won't bring us true liberation. True liberation comes only through going through all the places we are caught. I'd like to share with you again today some more of the teachings of the Zen master Kato Fukushima, who was the head abbot of Tofukuji, a Rinzai Zen headquarters temple in Kyoto, Japan, in a book called Zen Bridge that was compiled and edited by Grace and Peter Shireson, a husband and a wife team who were students of Fukushima Roshi, and recorded the encounters they had with him, and also his talks that he gave, and other things, and eventually produced this book. Fukushima Roshi died in 2011, and his last years he had Parkinson's, but that didn't stop him from being an incredible human being. No matter what happens to us, nothing needs to stop us from being an incredible human being that we are already. We just have covered up our exquisite perfection, our deep compassion and wisdom, because of our conditioning and our assumptions about life and who we are based on how we were treated as we were growing up. That's not who we really are. And the big question is, if that's not who we are, then who are we? Because once we get even a glimpse of who we really are, a lot of extraneous stuff, baggage, drops away, and we're more able to live with an empty mind. An empty mind is one where, because we don't have preconceived ideas about something that is happening or something that's about to happen or something that did happen in the past, we are free to experience it just as it is, which can be remarkably different from how we expect it to be or thought it was or want it to be. This is one of the big things about Zen practice. It frees us up to be authentic, to be real, to be free of our assumptions about life, people, and ourselves. And this is very important. We cannot be truly compassionate unless we are willing to see the person that we think we're being compassionate towards, not through the lens of our conditioning and our assumptions about that person, but with no assumptions at all. open to who that person appears to be in the moment, because our lives are a flow. Our personalities are a flow. We're not a single fixed self. Though we cling to the idea that we are because it feels safe. And actually, it's not very safe at all. We can get ourselves into a lot of trouble hanging on to that assumption of a fixed self. And the freedom to move with circumstances without being caught on any idea of who we are, how we have to be, or what we have to defend, allows us to be truly in the moment and defend when defending is needed and called for, and responding in any other way that really is the most appropriate way to respond in a circumstance, without having seen to some degree into our self-nature and let go to a certain degree that self-image. It's impossible to do that. And to be able to do that is to live in the most incredible freedom there is. So that no matter where we find ourselves, what circumstances we find ourselves within, we truly are free, even in some of the most challenging circumstances, because we're not caught on having to be a certain way, driven by the self-image. So, in this book, Zen Bridge, there is a chapter 12 titled "A Thief Comes to Tofugiji." And the little paragraph at the head of the chapter says, "Because Zen emphasizes that you must become what you encounter. When you encounter something enjoyable, it's very enjoyable. When you encounter something sad, it's okay to cry." But how often do we live according to that? Daily life based on Muxin, that is an empty mind or no mind, and which we discussed in an earlier Taisho, it doesn't mean non-existence. It means having let go of a self-image. Empty mind is really a mind filled with potential. The scroll overhanging our altar here at Mountain Gate reads, "Out of not one thing, arise the 10,000 things." One could say that empty mind is that, filled with potential. But empty of assumptions, we can meet circumstances freely and respond freely, because we're not caught in a need to defend or uphold or be in a certain way. We can be authentic. Daily life based on Muxin is a very free existence. In English, we use the words freedom and free. In Chinese, the term for freedom was originally a Zen term composed of two characters. The first character means myself, and the second character means to depend upon. Thus, the meaning of freedom, jiyu in Chinese, means to depend upon oneself. However, that oneself is one's true self. We're not talking about self-image here. We're talking about the fundamental basis of your being, your original source. If one only understands freedom superficially, one might mistakenly think it means dependence upon an egotistical existence. But if we fully understand freedom, we know it is a Zen expression. We must ask, what is the self upon which we must depend? We depend on the self that arises when we destroy our ego. Now, this is language that I have some concerns with. We don't go about working to destroy our ego. We go about working to see through our self-image, to see it for what it is, a collection of ideas, assumptions, a collection of stories, not the real thing. And if that's not the real thing, then who are we really? Because we depend upon this no ego self, existence is quite free. I can say this from personal experience. When the ego is destroyed, and when we can adapt to and respond to anything and everything and accept everything, the heart feels spacious. It's not when the ego is destroyed. Schizophrenics live in that condition. It's when our self-image is so thoroughly seen through, we no longer attach to it. Then we are able to adapt to respond to anything and everything and accept everything, and the heart feels spacious. For a long time, in the earlier years of Zen in America, it was taught that we have to destroy our ego. And that's not entirely accurate, as you just heard. We're not about to destroy anything. We're about to see through the limitations of a self-image, to see it for what it is. As I said, a series of artificial constructs based on assumptions garnered through experiences, through what people have told us. It's not real. It's not who we really are. And of course, then, the basis of our practice is to find out who we really are. If we're not this collection of stories, if we're not the self-image. Until I trained as a Zen monk, I had a reputation for being rather hard-nosed. In my native temple, I would often get mad at the younger monks beneath me, probably because I had a strong ego. My third year of training was very important for me. When I returned to my native temple during the fourth year of my training, one of the younger monks remarked that I didn't get as mad as I used to anymore. It was only when he said this that I realized I'd changed. When you enter Mushin, empty mind, you get mad less often. And that madness doesn't come from the standpoint of an egotistical stance. You could also say you become very happy. But just because you feel happy doesn't mean you'll be overjoyed with everything that happens. If there's an earthquake, you're not happy about it. When you encounter something unfortunate, you're saddened by it. But because Zen emphasizes that you must become what you encounter, when you encounter something enjoyable, it's very enjoyable. And when you encounter something sad, it's okay to cry. My work with the monks on their Zen koans ends at 5 in the morning. I'd like to watch TV after I finish, but there's no TV in Japan at 5 in the morning. A friend of mine who works at NHK, the Japanese TV network, I told him, "You guys sleep too much." But he replied, "No, you get up too early." So I set up a satellite TV for the abbot's quarters. There are 25 sub-temples on the Tofukuji grounds, which means there are 25 priests, one for each sub-temple. But I was the first to get satellite TV because I have to know about the world. He also says that monks are not permitted to watch television or read newspapers. The monks' ability to see into themselves is sharpened by eliminating TV and newspapers. One is allowed to read newspapers when one reaches one's fifth year and becomes a senior monk. As a Zen master, I have to read newspapers and watch television. This is because I often have to leave the monastery to lecture to lay people, so I need to be aware of what's going on in the world. When a famous drama is on TV, many people watch it. So sometimes I find sources for my lectures in TV dramas. Because I'm a very happy man, when I come across a sad drama, there's nothing to do but cry. And sometimes the handkerchief isn't enough, so I need to keep a big towel nearby to wipe away my tears when I'm watching a sad drama. I mentioned this once in a lecture, and a member of the audience asked me after the talk, why Zen masters cry? That's a big question among people. If you're so free, if you're so enlightened, why do you cry when things are sad? Why do you laugh when things are funny? As if we're supposed to be zombies? People doing deep practice live more authentically. They laugh when it's appropriate to laugh. They cry when it's appropriate to cry. Where is the problem? I answered that it's because I'm a Zen master that I cry. Fully taking anything in means when you're happy, you're very happy. And when you're sad, you cry. To understand about the difference between before training and after training is to understand that after training, one is not so attached to one's feelings. One is free to experience them. And so when one cries at something sad, one is crying in response to the moment of sadness. One doesn't keep the story going around and around and around and around, crying and crying and crying again. When the moment is gone and the sadness is gone, the crying ends. It's as simple as that. We don't need to keep these stories going. And yet, until we've gone pretty deeply into our Zen practice, we tend to revisit stories, particularly sad ones or ones where we get angry or ones where we get upset in some other way. Somehow it feels good to keep ruminating on them. But is that living? It's like staying in your house and keeping the curtains drawn on a beautiful spring day when you could be out enjoying the sunshine, the flowers, and the butterflies, and the birds, gardening, or having a good walk down the street, or enjoying the company of a friend. Why stay locked up in your own little story? Over and over again. You can say, well, because I can't get out of it. You would be surprised how easy it is to get out of it when we are willing to get out of it. Freedom of mind is born from Muxin. Even though there's nothing binding me, this is not a passive freedom, not a freedom from, but a freedom to. You go forward freely. But this is not a selfish freedom, and it's not a self-centered freedom. Basically, a Mu person cannot be self-centered or selfish. You naturally begin to think of everyone around you and to love people around you. Loving and self-examination arise naturally. That's part of what we were speaking of yesterday. Or I guess it wasn't yesterday, it was a few days ago. Watch your footsteps. Take a look. First, be present in the moment. And then also take a look at how you're behaving. Is it functional or dysfunctional? Is it free or is it caught on something? If it's dysfunctional, if it's not free, then there's tremendous opportunity to work, to let go, whatever it is. And this also is part of Zen practice. It's an important part of Zen practice, because Zen practice is not simply about putting your hours in on the cushion, or putting notches in your belt each time you pass a koan. It's about the transformative powers of the work on the cushion, of the koan work. The power to let go in ways that allow us to truly live. If you throw your ego away, you naturally think about and love people around you from the bottom of your heart. If you cut off your ego, you experience this love arising with no explanation. This is the true Mu experience. This is good understanding. And again, I would substitute for ego, I would say self-image. Compassion is different from romantic love. Well, I don't deny the beauty of romantic love. Compassionate action is the expression of religious love. Romantic love is very beautiful, especially in the beginning. For the lovers involved, there's no problem. However, there may be a problem for other people around them who may feel left out. What's more, romantic love can become egotistical, greedy, or selfish. The classic end of the honeymoon period. But religious love arises from the religious and spiritual conversion experience, in quotes, of becoming the Mu self. In order to experience this kind of religious or spiritual love, you have to be able to forget yourself. Remember Dogen's instructions. To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to become enlightened by the 10,000 things. To become enlightened by the 10,000 things is to remove the barrier between self and other. And instantly compassion arises. It's not pity, and it's not self-centered. It's true, unconditional love. This is where, as the expression goes, even garbage glitters like gold. One's heart goes out to the drunk lying in the gutter. One's heart goes out to the person you're having to take to the psych unit who's sitting there in the back seat cursing you every mile of the way. In order to experience this kind of religious or spiritual love, you have to be able to forget yourself. To put this even more strongly, in a situation where you need to save an infant in front of a car, in that moment you forget yourself completely to save the baby. This is the religious love that arises from the Mu experience. Compassion has many forms. 6 years ago, a man named M came to visit Tofukuji. Mr. M was not a friend of mine. In fact, he was a thief. And I have no thieves as friends. Anyway, this fellow came to the temple and said he wanted to meet me. A senior monk led him to the guest receiving room. When I entered the receiving room, this young man introduced himself, announcing that his name was M, that he was 30 years old, and that he was a thief. I got very, very mad. I have a loud voice, and M was so taken aback, he fell into a chair. I was mad because thief is not an occupation. Earlier, when the senior monk was leading him to the guest room, Mr. M had asked what he should do when the Roshi came into the room, and the monk told him he should just introduce himself, simply give his name, age, and occupation. I'm sure Mr. M had never been given an opportunity to introduce himself as a thief, so this introduction was a first for M, and you have to admit he was honest. He really had no other work. I cannot imagine this happening in America. But Japan is a very different culture. And also the fact that he would have gone to the temple to meet with the abbot says something was stirring in him. After initially getting mad, I spoke with him. When M left the monastery, he decided to go directly to the police, and he's in prison now, even now. I think he's scheduled to be released soon. It may be difficult for him to re-enter society. After all, he's now roughly 36 years old. In any case, when he leaves prison, if he comes to speak to me about becoming a priest, I'd be happy to have him train with me. Two or three years from now, I may return here with M to give another lecture. Before M left, he asked me one question. He said, when I first introduced myself to you, you really got mad. You're really a scary fellow. But a minute later, you spoke kindly to me. How can you change your feelings so quickly? Intentionally bringing anger forward and letting go of it completely in the next moment is something a Zen master who has experienced Satori enlightenment can do. Because of the Satori experience, you are able to live a free daily life. And that means when it's appropriate to get mad, you get mad. When it's appropriate to be sad, you're sad. And then it's gone. You don't hang on to either one of them. Each moment unfolds freely, new, without hanging on to anything else. And it has to do as well with how we meet people. By meeting people, I mean how we regard people. When we assume a person is a certain way, we imprison them in our idea about them. And our interactions with them are based on our being caught in that idea, which limits the interactions and in its own way really limits their freedom to be able to change. This is a fundamental meaning of the first precept of not to kill, but to cherish all life. It doesn't just refer to not slicing the neck of a cow or wringing the neck of a chicken. Or going into battle and shooting people. It has to do with freezing the perfect nature of someone, turning it into a caricature of that person. This is something most people have a very difficult time with. We're taught to regard people in categories. This person is selfish. This person is nice. This person is not very competent. This person is stupid. Those are momentary, superficial assumptions on our part, or perhaps on the part of a group of people. They're not a fundamental truth about these people. And we really lock ourselves and them into a very uncompassionate relationship when we do this. To see each person through the eyes of the Buddha, not getting caught on manifestations of greed, anger, or delusion. This is one of the things we recite when we do the metta, the loving kindness meditation. And a person who is truly enlightened is able to do that. And the results can be stunning in the most positive ways. No matter where a person is coming from, if they're met openly and with honor, there is potential for them to live up to that. And this is something truly to remember. So here we are on nearing the end of day 6 of this session. And we've done a lot of serious sazen in the moments leading up to this. And again, as you've heard so many times, our capacity is even greater than it was an hour ago. So take advantage of that And no matter what it appears to be, trust that as you keep giving yourself to this phenomenal practice, you're gradually, without even realizing it, becoming more free. More free to be who you really are. There is an expression in Zen, it's like walking in the morning mist. At some point your clothes become damp, but you can't say which moment that is exactly. It is the same way with Zazen. As you continue diving into your practice, regardless of what seems to come up, still plunging in, continuing to work, you cannot help but become more free. And with that, I thank you for listening. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.